Our topic today is on smartly moving your law office. Most of us don't appreciate the finer points of moving furniture, boxes of files, computers, and all the other paraphernalia that makes up a typical law office, while at the same time not losing billable hours. Dr. Bill Salibi provides some clues to achieving a successful move in this interview with Ed. Couple his words of wisdom with Chapter 36 of Ed's best-selling book, The Attorney and Law Firm Guide to the Business of Law, 2nd edition, and you will be assured of success.
Bill, thanks for joining us today. It's my pleasure to be able to talk to you about a subject that very few people actually do talk about, but yet are involved with on numerous occasions throughout their life, and that is moving from one location to another.
Thank you very much for having me on today, Ed. I appreciate it.
Tell me, you know, in the broad scope of things, our audience is the legal community, and lawyers do move, as I said, from one location to another. And equally important, they start new offices, going from a large firm to their own practice or just coming out of law school, perhaps. What are the main things that these people need to consider when they move from one place to another?
I think the most important thing to consider is they need to know if what they're going to be moving fits where they're going. So they need to do a space plan. They need to determine if they really have to take everything they think they want to take. So often a move is a good opportunity for people to get rid of things. So determining what moves is very important. In fact, it's really impossible for me to give them any kind of budgetary estimate unless I know what is moving.
So in other words, this might be the perfect time to reduce all that storage space that they've been holding on to for all these years. Is that right?
That is right. In fact, I had one client who was a large law firm that actually moved internally within their building, and they're a multiple-floor law firm, and what they did is they used a renovation, and during the renovation, they actually got rid of a lot of the stuff they had in their own storage in their building.
And that, of course, reduces the cost of the facility if you don't have to maintain storage space.
That is correct. So getting rid of stuff can be very helpful.
Now, is that an opportunity also to not only destroy things, that is, throw them away and so forth, but also if you're going to move the box once, maybe to open the box, look inside to see its contents, and then perhaps image that stuff electronically and then throw it away? Does that happen often?
It does, as long as it's done far enough in advance of the move. You shouldn't try and do that too close to the move, because then it could get confusing, because you may say, well, I have these 10 or 20 boxes that have things in there that we can, you know, put on disk and not take them. But I would say that should be done as far in advance as is possible.
Well, if you're planning a relocation, what are some of the most important factors to ensure the success of the move?
The administrator or whoever is in charge of the move has to consider the hours of the building, the hours that the building allows moving, both the building they're moving from, their origin, to their destination. So in most high-rise buildings do not allow moving during business hours, so therefore the move typically has to take place after 5 or 6 o'clock at night or on weekends. So everybody who's moving, an administrator or an office manager or whoever's in charge of it, has to consider that. We also need to consider the space, and usually larger firms have space planners that have already planned that out for them, so they know that what they're moving fits. And if it doesn't, they have to get rid of things. So, for example, if they're moving from 10,000 square feet to 7,000 square feet, and they're pretty full with their current space, they need to get rid of some things, or it's just simply not going to fit. And it's going to cost them more money, because the movers are going to be standing around saying, you said 10 file cabinets would fit in this room and only 6 fit. What do you want us to do with these other 4 file cabinets that don't fit in this area?
So knowing what you want is probably the key. I hate that kind of questioning, because that just tells me I haven't thought enough about what I'm going to do, and kind of want you to to handle that, but that doesn't happen that way, is what you're saying.
Well, often people don't know what I need to know before I can give them a proposal, and the most important single thing I need to know is what is moving. So if a firm knows what they're going to be moving, or at least they know approximately what they're going to be moving, then I can give them an estimated cost or a budgetary figure. If they know, and even if they don't know where they're moving to, so let's say, for example, taking Los Angeles, for example, let's say that somebody is moving from Century City and they know they're moving to another building in Century City, they just don't know what building. They know it's a high rise, they want a budgetary, but they don't know their destination. I can still give them a figure because there's not going to be a huge difference going from one high rise building to another high rise building. One building, one from another.
Right.
So
well,
you have to know. They can get a budgetary from me before they know where they're moving, but they can't get any kind of accurate figure if they don't, if they can't tell me approximately what is moving.
You mentioned cost a couple of times. How do you assess the cost associated with the relocation?
We have a formula. What we do is we first of all, we do what we call a cube sheet, which is an inventory. So we take an inventory on one, pretty old school, one sheet of paper, and I will count the number of desks, number of credenzas, number of bookcases, number of file cabinets, number of chairs, et cetera. Based on that, I'll come up with what I call a cube factor. So let's say the cube factor comes out to a number of 10,000, just for the sake of argument. Then I have a formula, depending upon the difficulty of the buildings, that I will then multiply by that 10,000 factor, and that'll give us a rough cost. So let's say it's a 1.5 factor difficulty. I don't want to get into too much, but detail that the average person wouldn't understand. But you have that, and then you come up and you say, well, 1.5, then it's about a $15,000 move. And then from that, knowing that it's about a $15,000 move, then I will figure manpower, how many trucks they need, how many movers they need, how many supervisors they need, and about how long it'll take, and about how much money it'll cost. And then we figure in materials, how many boxes or crates they need, any kind of packing material, you figure that in, and then you come up with an estimated cost.
Well, something you said intrigues me, and I may have heard it wrong, but you said you multiply by this factor, and you come up with a number, and I think the number you said was like $15,000, and then you figure in how many trucks, how many supervisors, materials, and so forth, and then you come up with a number. What is that $15,000 number as contrasted with that final number?
Oh, the $15,000 is what the move will cost. And then what we do is we back in the move, the cost for the labor of the move is roughly $15,000. Then I figure in, based upon that number, I need so many trucks, so many movers, so many hours. And it's not, then it's already, that's part of the $15,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the aspects of reasonably large moves that might surprise us that we would not think are important but that are critical for you?
Well, I think one of the things that is surprising to people is just that they need more than one truck. Some firms will say, well, when is the truck coming out here? And I say, well, there's going to be multiple trucks. You're moving two floors, and you're going from downtown L.A. to Santa Monica. We're going to probably need five trucks, and we're probably going to need about 30 or 32 movers plus two supervisors, and it's going to take 2 days. That surprises them right away. They go, well, I had no idea it would take that many people, or it would take that many trucks, or it would take that much equipment. We might use 300 or 400 four-wheel dollies and maybe 20 or 30 machine carts. In addition to that, we'd have library carts. So the amount of equipment, the amount of manpower is really surprising to some people. They just can't imagine that it would take that much. Also that I think people are surprised that we could come in on a Friday for a fairly large firm, and by Saturday evening, we've got them completely moved in. Everything is in place. The computers are hooked up, and they are going to be operational. Because as having moved and specialized in moving law firms, one of the, if not the most important thing, one of the most important things is we are operational and we can have billable hours first thing Monday morning. We are not waiting for our furniture to get there. Our computers are all hooked up. We are in business first thing Monday morning. So we figure what we need to do to make sure that happens. And in the over 30 years I've been doing this, I've not once failed to get a moving company, failed to get a firm up and running. So we know how important that is, and we make sure we have the proper equipment and manpower to get it done.
That must be quite a reserve of personnel to be able to do that, since I'm sure you don't do this every day. That is not, there aren't that many large law firms moving every day. So how is it that you maintain your reservoir of people?
Well, we have a you know, a regular pool of about 90 to 100 movers, and then we have others we can call if we get busy. So, for example, if we have say two large law firms that we're moving in one weekend, and each one takes say 30 movers, it's fairly easy for us to put 30 movers on one of the moves and 30 movers on the other move, and we just have them available to us, and they've worked with us. Most of the people that have worked with us have worked with us as long as we've been in business.
Hmm. Now, do you find that you're doing most of this work on the weekend?
Most of the big moves do take place on the weekend, usually either Saturday, just on Saturday, or Friday night, Saturday. And the real big ones will be Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. So if it's a multiple floor, that is more than one floor moving, then it's going to go into Sunday. And in some cases, it's over two weekends. They may move, say, their accounting department and their library or their file room prior to the main move, possibly during the week at night, and then have the main move take place on the weekend.
And part of that, I gather, is caused by the hours that the buildings will let you be in there. Is that right?
That's a big driving force.
Huh.
When we can work in the buildings, and we usually know that because we work in these buildings all the time, and we know their requirements. So,
are there many buildings that allow you to move during the week, during the day?
No, not really that many. Not any substantial high rise. Now, if it's a low rise building, possibly, but typically no.
Well, what are some of the things that have changed over the years of your being in business? You said 30 years that you've been doing this. What are some of the things that significant that have changed, and some of the things that have stayed the same?
Well, I would say several things have changed. One is in the old days we would use tractor trailers on office moves a lot, semis. Now, within downtown areas or commercial areas like Century City or Westwood, we use almost exclusively bobtail trucks with lift gates. So that is one change. Another big change, it happened in the past 5 or 7 years, are the use of plastic crates instead of boxes, or at least the customer has the option to use crates or boxes. So that's been another big one. Another one is the proliferation of systems furniture, modular furniture, so that in the old days, if you moved, say, a big law firm, you'd be moving all the furniture. These days, you may only be moving the partner furniture and contents and computers. So what is moving it has changed. A lot of, and another one is move consultants have come in and become pretty prominent, not as much in the legal community as in other aspects of commercial relocation, but they are there, and we work with them. So in the old days, you might be working just with the administrator. Now you might be working with the administrator and or the move consultant. Many things have stayed the same. The four-wheel dolly, the cart, they were here 30 years ago. They're probably going to be here 30 years from now. Some things haven't changed. You still have to really move things from point A to point B. So many of the things have stayed the same.
You mean you cannot call Scotty and have him beam you up?
That would be nice. It'd also be nice when a building is right next to another building that they're moving to, you could just, you know, get a crane and you know.
Well, has anybody ever called you Scotty? They're Scotty.
No, I wish they did, but they don't.
That might be a good brand name.
Yeah, that would be good.
What are some of the keys to that the lawyer should think about to enable a successful and a successful move without more pain than is needed?
I think they need to listen to the mover. The mover is the expert, and don't think they know more than the mover about how long it's going to take. Hire someone who has moved other law firms. Use referrals. So if one administrator says I've used this company and they're outstanding, and they'll get you moved in, and they'll get you moved in safely, and they're easy to work with. Very important. Don't just go for the lowest price. That's really important. You get what you pay for. If you're just going for the lowest, not all movers are the same. So you get the movers that have never moved a law firm. They don't know how to move a library. They wouldn't know the first thing about moving a file room. They don't understand how important it is to get you moved in have everybody moved in by Monday morning. So I would say those are really important things. If I were a managing partner of a firm, I would make sure my administrator had support, and I would help him or her select a move team that was going to be present during the move. A requirement that a certain number of people were on the move team. Large moves may have 10 or 12 people on the move team. A smaller move may only have 2 people that are going to be present during the move. Somebody does need to be there. I would also take out additional valuation coverage if you have very valuable items, because movers are covered only at 60 cents a pound. So I would take out additional coverage to protect items just in the event that there is any damage.
Well, in my book, The Attorney and Law Firm Guide to the Business of Law, Chapter 36 talks about the steps to making a move. And one of the things that I describe in there is almost equivalent to the trial notebook, where you, in effect, plan out the entire strategy of the trial before you go into the opening day of motions and arguments and actual trial. In terms of preparing for the move, what kinds of things does the administrator or the managing partner need to do specifically in identifying steps and time frames and people and the like?
Well, we actually have what we call a suggested checklist for office moves, and it's based on a lead time of 1 year. And so for example, we have it down to 1 year, 11 months, 5 months, up right to the move. For example, 1 year, you would appoint the person responsible for the move, which would most likely be the office administrator, but not necessarily, but in most cases it's going to be the office administrator. Organize a move team, and then as you get closer, some of these things may have been done already, but hire an architect or a space planner to plan the space. Obviously, if you're doing any kind of construction, all those kinds of things. And then it tells you when they would get proposals from moving companies, when they should make their decision. So it's a checklist month by month about what they would do leading up to the move.
Let me ask you, Bill, in what might be our last question for today's session, something that most people, I think, psychologically at least, would appreciate, and that is, okay, we've made our move. We've done everything you've told us to do. You've actually finished the project. Come Monday morning, we're back at our desk, and we're doing at least some billable, if not full billable, time, trying to get used to the new environment. How is it? What does the law firm do? What does the individual lawyer do to recover from a major move?
Well, I think the one thing is, I don't know if this is really recovery or just more work, but you got to unpack your boxes. That's more work. That's not, but it is part of the recovery process. to where you're...
In other words, the mover's not doing that for you.
No, the mover's not doing that. But one thing we do that does alleviate a lot of this is on any a move of any size is we have what we call a fine-tune crew that is on-site at least the Monday or and or Tuesday and or Wednesday following the move. On big moves, we'll have maybe 4 to 6 movers out there fine-tuning the movement of the furniture. This didn't quite fit here. Can you move it over 4 inches? We've got some empty cartons here in this office. Can you take these away? We had to leave this piece on a dolly. Can you place it now and take the dolly out of here? So we provide post-move support to the degree that the client wants it. Obviously, it costs money, but it's worth it because it helps. You don't want any people to hurt themselves moving things around. So that helps a lot, is to have movers around a couple of days, at least one day after the move. Again, it doesn't apply to moving 2 attorneys, but it certainly applies to moving multiple floors.
Well, I can tell you from my own experience that I would challenge you a bit and say that even for 1 or 2 lawyers, such additional help is appropriate. Otherwise, they're doing it themselves and not doing the billable work.
I think a lot of times that is true, but they don't want to pay for it. So therefore, they're going, when you're done on Saturday, you're done. And all of this, there's a cost associated with it, but if you want it done right, hire somebody that has the experience and that's going to do it in a seamless manner.
Amen. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us today. It's been a pleasure for me, anyway, to look at this process through the eyes of an expert.
Thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate you having me on.
You have been listening to a LawBiz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about LawBiz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.